Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Steve Aoki has followed an unusual career path on his way to becoming one of the most successful dance music producers on the planet, beginning in the hardcore music scene, starting a record label, and then moving on to DJing. Aoki has been a one-man perpetual motion machine. You're hearing his latest song in the background. Supernova is a collaboration with the Italian duo Marnik and the rapper Lil Jon. But that's not what brings Steve Aoki to our Soundcheck studio today. He is the subject of the new documentary film called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, which charts the course of his life and career and introduces, or maybe I should say reintroduces us, to his late dad, Rocky Aoki. Steve, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
And for people who don't recognize the name Rocky Aoki, you may recognize the name Benihana, which was your dad, basically. That was his restaurant chain.
Right, especially in New York City.
Yeah.
That's where I was founded. That's where his stomping grounds were for majority of his life.
Right. And he was a great wrestler, a famous daredevil. He was on TV all the time. And then, yes, Benihana. But doing a documentary on you, Steve, seems like trying to hit a moving target because, like your father, you're constantly doing stuff. How did this documentary come to be?
In the beginning, I mean, I always travel with someone that's filming and photographing. So I'm already used to having a team with me that's documenting, and we post on our YouTube channel. So when the Jiro Dreams of Sushi team, that's actually the team that came aboard, David
right.
Gelb and Matt Weaver and Justin Crook, who was the director and editor, and he was with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they came aboard, and
had you seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi? Had you seen that documentary?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
There was a couple different groups of people that were interested in filming the behind the scenes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these guys were like, "Hey, we want to do it too," and so we brought them in. And in the beginning, it was like, okay, how is this going to look? What's the perspective going to be? And after seeing the film, Jiro, like, okay, this is going to be a different perspective, you know, than what I would normally, you know, narrate.
Right, and tell the whole family story. It's important to say that your dad and your mom were divorced. Your dad was like a distant figure, almost a figure of legend, it seems.
Yeah.
So when you say not a lot of opportunities, people who think, well, he was the son of the Benihana guy. He must have been born with, like, all kinds of money.
Right.
You had to actually, I mean, that's part of the story, is you had to work for all of this.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about my father is that he was smart, and he supported me by not financially supporting me, you know.
Right.
So in that regard, he also didn't want to shove his children into a lane that they didn't want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, you know, he did pay for my education, which I'm, you know, definitely appreciative of, because I don't have any student loans that I had to deal with. When I left college, I had to figure out what I wanted to do, which is music. And that's not the path that any traditional parent, you know, from a Japanese household, like, that's not a future that looks like a wise financial future.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, you know, from his perspective, he's like, okay, why would I help this? You know, mm-hmm. It's more like, I'm going to wait till this fails, and then he's going to have to figure it out for himself, you know, what the right decision should be. But I will always make sure to remind him to get a real job, to get something that's going to be sustainable and stable.
So. It is hard to imagine a job more real than the relentless touring that you keep up. There's a moment in the film where your manager, Matt, is discussing an argument you guys have had. And this is from the film called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead.
This morning we had a whole argument with Steve. He's upset that he flew from Sweden to Vegas yesterday. He had a 3 o'clock set. Then he had an interview for PBS.
Wedding cake?
Yeah.
Then he had a set at Hakkasan in Vegas. He finishes at like 4:30. Got a 6 a.m. lobby call.
Barely surviving.
Flies to LA, lands at 9:30. At 11:30, he has to be at a music video shoot. It's a 10-hour shoot. Then he has a studio session with Will.i.am. Tomorrow he's got a radio at 8 in the morning.
Steve Aoki, welcome back to the neighborhood.
Interviews all day long.
One, two, three.
And then he has a flight at like 6 o'clock back to Ibiza. The argument today, he's like, when do I sleep?
Hence the title of the film, I'll Sleep When I'm Dead.
I almost forgot about those, that moment that Matt's talking about. But yeah, that's very common.
Yeah, and you do this, I mean, you do up to 300 shows a year, right?
That was when I peaked, mm-hmm. you know. But now the magical number is around 220.
All right.
So it's a manageable number. I mean, I'm going to rewind back a bit. You know, when I was in bands, I was touring and playing in front of like 10 to 40 people mm-hmm. in basements, living rooms, wherever I could possibly play. And when I got to the point where I'm actually doing concerts, where I was DJing and I was playing in front of 1,000 to 5,000 to even more, you know, I always brought myself back to that place when I was playing in front of 10 people. And I would love, you know, after playing at those small shows and doing a run of like 60 shows, you know, in a bus tour, and, you know, not sleeping and not showering and not getting the right necessities in life, I was ready to go back on the road again back then, you know, and where like we would make like $20 to $50 a show. So, you know, you go back to why you do the things you do. You know, it's like you make this music and you want to play this music and you want to connect with people through your music. So that's essentially the same thread that's been tying since the very beginning when I was in bands and I was playing a different kind of music, but at the same time, I was making music all the same.
Right. Now, with dance music, and I think it's Diplo who says this early in the documentary, that he says dance music doesn't have a lot of personality. Steve Aoki has an overabundance of personality. And then we cut to you, you know, you're kind of the Iggy Pop of EDM, you know, the shirt's off more than on, and you're hurling yourself out into the crowd.
Well, you started seeing this personality come out when I started to merge, once again, going back to my roots, merge some of the philosophy and the musical components of when I used to be in these hardcore bands where it was that Iggy Pop element, that, like, you know, that crowd surfing, stage diving, screaming in the microphone, you know, not really caring how you looked on stage so much as how you felt. I started merging that philosophy in with my music production as well as my live shows. And when I started doing that in around 2007, 2009, that's when my true personality started ringing out. And I was waving this flag that I used to wave back then through my music again, and it really felt incredible to be able to find that moment, you know, and then really embellish it.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment in the documentary where we hear your hit song, I Love It When You Cry, in a live setting, and, you know, it's clearly the same song, but it's also clearly not just the record, you
right,
know,
yeah.
it's a slightly different mix, so... let's hear a little bit, and then I want to ask you, you know,
sure.
how this is done live. That is Steve Aoki and I Love It When You Cry, featuring vocals by Moxie. So this is a live... Is this one... This isn't Tomorrowland, is it?
Yeah, this is Tomorrowland.
It
yeah.
is Tomorrowland. So Moxie's obviously not there with you, so that's got to be canned. So How do you make this a live performance piece?
Well, it's I'm playing the song, playing like a wave file of the song, but I made a festival, what I call a festival edit. So I make a festival version for the song. So all those stadium kicks and claps are specific so I can get people to clap along.
Right.
You know.
You do have faders and dials and stuff, so you can be, adjusting,
of course,
changing?
Yeah. But once I've mixed from one song to the next, when I've done that sort of technical part, then I have a decision to let the song play out. If I want to mess around with the mix itself, I can, or I can use that time to do something interactive with the crowd. For this song, you know, I want people to clap with me, so I stand up on the DJ booth. I'm like, all right, let's put our hands together, everyone, and boom, we start clapping. You look out in the crowd, and they follow you, and they feel this moment, you know, singing along to the song, clapping. See, if, you know, 67,000 people doing it. To me, that's way more of a memorable experience than me, you know, turning the mids down, maybe like adding a bit of a verb to it or mm-hmm. whatever it might be, to, you know, musically translate it better. I prefer to do that in that particular case.
It's funny to hear you talk about, you know, interacting with the audience, such a kind of highfalutin way of saying throwing sheet cakes at them.
Yeah, that's another part of the show that's highly interactive.
How did that start?
I'm always thinking, what can I add to the show that's going to be more of a signature, more of something that's exclusive or unique to a Steve Aoki show? And that's in 2011. That's when I introduced the idea of caking someone. And
the verb to cake.
And
now people hold up signs to say, cake me.
Right, right. And you put it up online. And, it's like in the beginning, you don't know if someone wants to get cake, because you can't just cake someone randomly. It's kind of, you present the cake, you know. And yeah. I remember I presented the cake, and I was waiting for someone to say, me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there was this one guy in the front, and he was pointing at his face, and all his friends were rallying around him like it was his birthday, and they're all just, like, picking him up, getting excited, and, you know, I made sure my videographer was there. I was like, we got to get this on camera. Show the cake to the camera. Show the cake to the guy. I'm like, are you ready? He says, I'm ready. Let's go. His friends are screaming, raging. Boom, caked him. The friends grabbing the cake from the floor, smearing it all over each other. And it was like, all right, this works.
Yeah.
Some things don't work, actually, though. Trial and error in the whole process of bringing different elements to the show.
But and that is show is exactly the right word. Just as your dad with Benihana made the behind-the-scenes work of cutting and dicing and cooking the food part of the show, you've become a showman as well. Have you ever gotten hurt?
Yeah, there is one. It's like, because most of my live shows are documented. So there's one where I jumped from my DJ booth onto this trampoline, and it hurled me in a really awkward way, and I hit my head on concrete.
Oops. Oh my god!
And I went to the hospital, but it wasn't a serious injury. It was more like, my neck was stiff for a few weeks, and I wore a neck brace and stuff like that. And it was a scary, hairy moment.
There is a moment in the documentary, again, it's called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, in which you're dealing with cysts on your vocal cords.
Yeah.
And that's from what? From shouting? From leading the crowd? Or is that from your years of hardcore? What was that from?
That's like an abundant. That's like everything, you know. Like from, I mean, definitely, you know, in the beginning of, yes, I used to sing in a band. I used to scream in a band. Not necessarily sing. I was screaming.
So let me play a little clip from the documentary. And I just want to check whether this is in fact you, Steve Aoki, singing / screaming.
Can I scream? Yeah.
Well, Is that you?
That's Dennis Lixon from Refused, one of my favorite vocalists
okay.
of all time, one of my favorite bands of all time. If I could scream like him, that would be the goal, you know? He's like one of my favorite singers.
Yeah. So that's the scene that you started in.
Yeah, that's a scene that it grew me into the musician that I became.
Well, the musician you became is a very different sound from, you know, kind of screamo hardcore music. How did you make that transition?
That was a long progress, and I'd say the thread that tied between my hardcore roots and later into electronic production and DJ culture was my record label. So I started my label when I was 19 in college, and mm-hmm. at the same time I was putting on shows that would house these bands that like similar to Refused. Actually, Refused was destined to play at the living room, my living room mm-hmm. called the Pickle Patch before, but they broke up on that tour. Uh-huh. But in any case, I was putting out bands like that in the beginning, but as my, inspirations and different musical acts that I liked, they're all different. So eventually I would ended up signing indie bands like The Kills and Block Party. And and I started remixing them. So I started remixing a lot of the indie bands because I had the stems and I was the label.
Right.
So they couldn't really say no to me attempting to do a remix, and I could actually release it myself. So I was like, hey, you know what? I got I got my own platform to remix a Block Party song.
Put Peach in the mix. Oh, you want it all.
Notice how. Empty.
You want it.
Running on. Bravado.
You want it all.
As if to say, as if to say, as if to say, he doesn't like chocolate. He's gonna lie, he'll die lie.
Band could be like, okay, all right, Steve, go ahead and release it on your label. It's fine. I have to get their approval, but they were more like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then I just got, so excited and so addicted to remixing groups that I spent the next 2 years, 2005, 2007, just remixing everything I could possibly get my hands on.
And it's been Dim Mach all along. It's been the record label from the early days to today, right?
From 96 to 2016, 20 years.
And where's that name come from?
It means death touch. It's a martial art move, and it's inspired by Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah, okay. So all right.
The story around Bruce Lee with a Dim Mach, it's a kind of mystery.
Yeah. So you make this long gestating transition from, hardcore to indie to remixing to DJing to producing your own stuff. And as the documentary tells it, the haters come out pretty fast.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they don't like is that you're bringing rappers into EDM.
Yeah, I mean, now it's like different, because it's more commonplace now. Even then, there's a lot of purists that don't like mixing the genres, but I'm definitely one for collaborative projects, and I love collaborating with artists outside of my own space, and definitely with artists that have never collaborated in my space, because there's a whole new lane that we can create by doing something totally unique, and of course there's people that just they don't like change, they don't like anything that's a foreign idea to them,
mm-hmm.
And I mean I'm already aware of that, so I just I'm always going to do things that are kind of challenging, my own status quo. I always want to change things up and inspire myself and my own sound.
Was it difficult to get someone like Kid Ink, to get him on board with the idea, like, this is what I'm doing and this is what I want you to do?
I think the difficult part is finding the right artist.
Yeah.
Because Kid Ink was already he was excited to be on board from the beginning, but there's a long list of artists that I want to work with that are not ready to make that step. You know?
Well, Kid Ink was ready, and the results were the song Delirious, and here again, a little clip from the documentary film called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead.
Kid Ink, you got me woke up. The way you roll that, sticky like okra. Just let me coach ya, show you about my culture. It's a late night show like Kona. Bitch, the party ain't over. Go ham in here and grab your friend by the hand. Let me know, is you down? Body like playmate of the year. I might make that play of the year. I already know that we don't play fair. But I think that you and your girl, could you give me some of that?
We stand
out till the sun up. Twisted and burn up.
A little bit of Delirious from my guest Steve Aoki featuring Kid Ink. The documentary about Steve's life and career is called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead. It's out on Netflix now. There's also a whole storyline of you setting up LAOki in downtown LA with your good friend, the mayor of LA,
Eric Garcetti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get to know each other?
When he was running for mayor, I was a big supporter. We held his like a meeting / dinner at my restaurant in LA, and when he had a big party, we did it together and at LA as well. And that was interesting because it was my fans and his supporters all in this room, and there's cake flying, there's champagne like flying. It was very interesting, and you know.
Now, in the Venn diagram of Steve Aoki fans and Eric Garcetti supporters, how much overlap of the circles were there?
My fans are in the front when I'm playing. I think a lot of his supporters were like watching, you know, amused. I think you know because they're there to support. You know, they you have to have an idea of what's happening when you go to a Steve Aoki show, even if it's an Eric Garcetti fundraiser.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, so you've toned it down a bit from 300 plus shows a year to your sweet spot is now around 220 a year.
Right.
All right. How long can you keep that pace up?
Well, that's why it's my sweet spot. So I can do it for quite some time. I think, you know, I can balance a lot of what I do, especially because I need a lot of time in the studio. Because the thing is, as a DJ, if you want to remain relevant, you have to continue to make relevant music.
Yeah.
And as it is today, everyone knows it, that music is, there's like a short attention span to what's popular, and it's hard to make music that's always going to directly hit you in the face. You know, sometimes the music you make that you think is the most beautiful thing you've ever done goes right over people's heads. Mm-hmm. And it's like you always have to balance hitting someone in the face with your music, like a cake in the face, and you be inspiring yourself and always trying to evolve your sound.
Yeah. Well, so what happens next? I mean, you were doing Neon Future during the making of this film. Are you working on another record now?
I'm making the third part of Neon Future as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty far down along the lines of finishing the album, but it's a different process altogether. And one thing I learned is that an album street date is never going to be fixed, you know, and I learned that the hard way with MSG. So there is no street date with Neon Future 3. I'm not putting one on, you know, putting out singles at different periods of time, and eventually the album will come out at the tail end of the single period of releasing a bunch of different songs.
Hence Supernova, the single that's out now.
Yeah, I mean, that song is not even going to be on Neon Future 3.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's a standalone.
Yeah, it's a standalone from... because I did Neon Future 1 and 2,
right.
And then I released Neon Future Odyssey, which was a collection of 1 and 2 and bonus material. And Supernova was the vocal version of one of the bonus instrumentals. So it's just a fun club song.
Yeah.
And Little John, you know, adds a lot of weight to that song. So we had to put it out.
All right. Well, Steve, best of luck with Neon Future 3 and everything else that you got That's going fun. On. Really a pleasure to see you. Thanks very much.
Appreciate it. Thank
you. Clap your hands to these boys. Everybody stars. Clap your hands to these boys. Everybody stars.
That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast. But as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other live performances, videos shot in the studio, our daily gig alerts, our weekly music roundups, and more. Check it out at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.
We live for tonight.